right, back in the Young Turks, Gabby Morita says, if you can't make your poll numbers rise, might as well at least make the sea level rise. If Captain Jingle Pants says, it's times like this that makes me okay with being an intellectual elitist. I like that an intellectual elitist has a Twitter handle, Captain Jingle Pants. But I agree with you.
Yep.
And then Control Left, I think, has the correct solution for climate change. Step one, move all the climate change denying politicians to Mar-a-Lago. Step two, keep them there as the sea level rises. Okay. And members of the day today are Andrew Kerr and Tom Carter. Thank you guys for becoming Young Turks members. And Anna's here, obviously, Jake Huger and Experian with you guys. And we have some stories, amazing stories for you guys. I did want to give you the back half of the Portland story, though, real quick. Let me tell you about that. So in Portland, there's a tragic stabbing of two people, three people, two of them who died, and the third who barely survived. And I didn't want to just tell you guys about the person who did it, and we talked about that terrorist in a different video, in a different section of the show. I also want to tell you about the heroes, because they merited. Now, this white supremacist terrorist had gone after two women who were, actually they're two girls, under the age of 18. One was a Muslim wearing a hijab, the other one was an African American. And he was yelling, get out of our country, go back to Saudi Arabia, you don't pay taxes here. And then three gentlemen stepped up to defend them. And that's why we call them heroes. It wasn't just because they died, it's because they died standing up for others. And they don't fit into neat ideological boxes either. They're all over the political spectrum. They're just decent, terrific Americans. So the first one is Taliesin Mirdin Namkai Meche. He's a young guy. And everyone, unsurprisingly, had wonderful, wonderful things to say about him. Not just because of what he did, but they said he's been that all along. This is Christopher Land, a friend of his. He said, this is a guy who had so many friends, and he seemed to have a special connection with every single one. We all say the same thing. Man, he's just the best person. He was a young guy who stepped up. He worked as in an environmental field, and he had recently graduated from a college in Portland. So as you see that young guy who was senselessly murdered, it's heartbreaking. Now we go to Ricky John Best. He was 53 years old, father of four. In the military most of his life. I'm gonna tell you about his political affiliation in a second. But first, a colleague of his, Corrine Perkins, said when she heard what he had done, she said, quote, that sounds just like him. Ricky John Best was a Republican, and he had run for office, but he wanted to get money out of politics. And so he ran his campaign without any large donors. And in a 2014 profile that ran during his campaign, the Oregonian said Best, quote, repeatedly stresses that he stands by his moral convictions no matter what. And boy, did he live that. He said that back in 2014, stands by his moral convictions no matter what. And unfortunately, that's exactly how he died. Fortunate that he is an American hero and saved those girls who might not be alive today if it weren't for him. Unfortunate that some terrorists killed him on that train. And Ricky John Best had said at the time, quote, I can't stand by and do nothing. By the way, on Namkai Meche that I mentioned earlier, the younger guy who passed away, his last words were, according to a witness, when he was stabbed, went down to help him, and he's bleeding, obviously profusely bleeding. And the woman took off her shirt and put it around his neck to try to stop the bleeding. And she kept telling him, look, you're gonna be all right, you did something heroic, etc. His last words were, tell everyone on the train I love them. So this is what happens when terrorists attack, and why it's such an awful, awful situation, and killing of innocents is so horrific, and it affects us all. So last guy is Micah David Cole Fletcher, and thank God he didn't die, but boy, he barely made it. Fletcher's neck was punctured, his jaw broken, and he had to undergo hours of surgery to remove bone fragments from his throat, according to CNN. In fact, we have a picture of that. If you're queasy, I was going to tell you to be careful, but boy, did he get cut up. And thank God he survived. So finally, let me tell you about him. Portland State University student is an avid poet who works whose works have addressed racism, bigotry, and social justice. As a high school student in 2013, Fletcher won a poetry slam with work that included a poem condemning anti-Muslim hate. 3 out of 3 guys who live by their words and took action based on their convictions. And his mom said, "I'm proud of him for standing up. I'm grateful that he's here. It's hard for me to say I want people to stand up, but two girls might be alive because of them." I actually want to give one more word, and that's to one of the victims. And she spoke out and said this.
"I just want to say thank you to the people who put their life on the line for me because they didn't even know me. And they lost their lives because of me and my friend and the way we looked. And I just want to say thank you to them and their family, and that I appreciate them. Because without them, we probably would be dead right now."
That's Destiné Magnum, and thank God at least she's alive today. So in this horrific attack, at least we see the best of us. And those guys who stood up for these girls who were under attack by this white supremacist are as good a human beings as we can hope for. And I'm proud that we live in a country where guys like that stand up for people who need to be defended.
I think it's a terrible, tragic story, but the slight positive coming out of this is just the different ideological, characteristics that these heroes had, and how they all were principled, all were completely decent human beings, and wanted to defend who they saw as defenseless people being attacked on a train, right? I love that, one of the people that defended these girls was considered a Republican, because oftentimes, and it happens on this show a lot, the Republicans that get the most attention are the ones who do the most heinous things. And I don't think that they're representative of most Republicans. I don't think they're representative of the Republican electorate. And sometimes we forget, right? The extreme people get the most attention, and I want to always refer back to this story when I start falling into that deep dark hole of, I guess, generalizing everyone in a political party.
So look, I'm torn on that, and I'll tell you why. I did a story earlier in this show about my deep frustration with the Republicans who want to pull out of the Paris climate deal, who deny science, so they're against facts, etc. But what we have to remember is that first of all, there's a great variety of Republicans, obviously, as you not only say now, but we said during the election. So yes, some are deplorable, and I'm not going to shy away from saying that. But a big chunk of them, as we've said all along, are good people that I think are misdirected. Okay, that's my opinion. I'm on the left, obviously, and so part of that variety is that a Portland Republican isn't necessarily the same as a Republican from Alabama, and you don't want to generalize within the states either. But yes, in the Northeast, you have more liberal Republicans on average, and as well in the Northwest. So, and then the second part of it is, a lot of people are born Republican. So that's why, I switched parties. I used to be Republican, but we had no family allegiance. It wasn't a sport to us. So we happened to be Republican because we had bought into their marketing. And then when we realized a lot of the marketing wasn't true, we switched over, and by the way, we're independents, right? And strong progressives, but independent. There used to be a thing called liberal Republicans where I grew up in New Jersey. That doesn't exist anymore. But for a lot of people, they never got the memo. So they still think that being a Republican means, better economy, balanced budgets, peace through strength, etc. Now those are slogans, and it's I don't think those are true, and I prove it on the show. The reason why I say I'm slightly split on it is because it's partly our job to get the word out, right? To say, hey, those things aren't true. And I got to tell you, it's not true. So if you listen to the marketing and the propaganda, and you think that as Tom Coburn said, and that's what I got angry about earlier in the show, mm-hmm. former senator from Oklahoma said, "Oh, maybe 25% of the world's scientists believe in climate change." Well, that's just not true. 97% of the world's scientists believe that climate change is real and man-made. So I got to tell you that. But at the same time, we all have to keep in mind that. That's why I say ignorant most of the time, mm-hmm. and not stupid or evil or bad or whatever, right? Because you might have grown up Republican and you might have believed the marketing that you got, and everybody right. gets some degree of brainwashing when they're growing up, including me. I was a Republican when I was growing up, right?
Yeah.
And so don't judge everybody in the same group when you hear the word. Talk to them and hopefully air out ideas and maybe come to an agreement on what you agree on and what you disagree on. And always keep best in mind here, because when you go and think, no, they're all bad guys, that is not remotely true. And here is, you know, one of the best stories I've heard about heroic actions by an American. And also true of a wonderful evangelical Christian who we made Turk of the Year one year. Who went to go fight Ebola mm-hmm. and went to Africa and endangered his life so that he could save others. So as we get frustrated day in, day out, let's not lose track to make the same mistakes that other folks make. I mean, this guy's a white supremacist that did the attack. He generalizes people by certain buckets, race, religion, etc. So we should be extraordinarily careful not to do the same. Okay, what's next, Anna?
All right. Three activists who were investigating factories in China have been detained. Now, one has definitely been detained, and his wife has confirmed that. However, two of the investigators just went missing. No one has heard from them, and the assumption is that they've been detained. Now, a labor activist researching working conditions in a Chinese factory that makes shoes for Ivanka Trump's label has been detained by police, while two others have gone missing and are presumed also to be detained. Now, two of the activists were told they were not allowed to leave China in April and May. Now, they were all part of an organization known as China Labor Watch, which is based in New York. They were in China doing this investigation in order to give this organization in New York essentially information about what's going on in these factories. And apparently, authorities in China caught on to them, and as a result, there were some ramifications, first in the form of essentially a travel ban, and then now they've been detained. Now, their initial report alleged that employees are forced to work at least 12 and a half hours a day and at least 6 days a week at a monthly salary of about $365. It said pay for some workers amounted to the equivalent of less than a dollar an hour. Now, those are averages. There were days where some of the workers were there for over 18 hours, working 18 hours straight. And so there are some, you know, human rights abuses there, some labor abuses there. And this is all something that was important for their investigation. And also, keep in mind that this is one of the factories that makes shoes and products for Ivanka Trump's brand. And so there's a political component to it as well.
So look, my guess is the Chinese government is not happy about these guys exposing the working conditions overall. But the fact that it's going to embarrass the president of the United States, who at this point is doing a lot of favors for China. Remember during the campaign, Donald Trump talked a big game about how he's going to crack down on China and end their currency manipulation, and he threatened tariffs, etc. Then he met with a Chinese leader and said, well, I didn't know that the situation was this complicated. And it turns out we need China's help with North Korea. Now, anyone who studies this, and if you're running for president, I would have hoped that you would have studied for it, but obviously he didn't, knows that of course you need China's help in North Korea. And of course it's not easy to just do unilateral tariffs or crack down on their currency manipulation. There's going to be ramifications and consequences. But Donald Trump's a child and didn't understand that. So now, by the way, Jared Kushner then went on to try to do a $4 billion deal with a company related to the Chinese government. They got so much blowback on that that the Chinese company had to step back from the deal, but it was going to give several hundred million dollars more to the Kushner family than those properties are estimated to be worth in New York, that is a giant payoff to the Trump family.
Right.
So now, within that context, when you see someone who's going to investigate Ivanka Trump's brands in China and all of a sudden they disappear, well, the Chinese government then should be under more scrutiny, not less.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And also keep in mind that there were internal memos in regard to the fact that Ivanka Trump had hired this factory to produce some of her products, and that, you know, maybe these investigations aren't so great in terms of optics. So let me give you the details on that. And this is based on the reporting of Simon Denner from the Washington Post. He writes that the Global Times cited staff members from two factories as saying their companies had received a memo from Ivanka Trump's China-based agent shortly after the US department store Nordstrom dropped her product in February, notifying them that any media report on her suppliers in China would not be good for her image for political reasons. So they were essentially warned, no bad press for Ivanka. And now, look, and by the way, it's super irresponsible to speculate, and I hope no one thinks we're speculating. It just looks very questionable considering the fact that one of the investigators for sure has been detained, and then two of them are just missing. Their family members haven't heard from them, and there's this assumption that they've been detained, but we still have no confirmation on that.
Yeah, and I want to be clear when we say don't speculate. Some people might start assuming that they're dead or something, or the Chinese government killed them or tortured them. We don't, no. All we know is one detained, two missing, okay?
Right.
And we do know that the Chinese government has a lot of incentive to make sure that Ivanka Trump's brand stays clean, because it turns out the Trump administration has been fantastic to China so far. They've not touched them at all, and so far have given them everything they want. In fact, Trump said after meeting with the Chinese leader that that the Chinese leader taught him about North Korea, and now he understands the situation more. No, but that's the Chinese perspective. You shouldn't take that at face value. You should listen to our intelligence officials. But you know how Trump is. So far, China is very, very happy and wants to keep good relationships with the Trump administration. We'll see if that winds up being part of the reason that these people are missing.
Right. All right, moving on to some other news. Draft legislation from the Trump administration indicates that he plans on rolling back Obamacare birth control coverage. Now, this was part of the Obamacare mandate that ensured that either employers or private insurers provided coverage for birth control for women. Now, that was a hotly debated topic at the time, and Republicans have been frustrated and furious about it till this day. And as a result, Trump decides that at some point he's going to jump in, probably sign an executive order indicating that if you are either a publicly traded or private company and you have any type of moral or religious issues with providing health insurance that covers contraceptives for women, then you don't have to do it anymore. The Affordable Care Act requires nearly all employers to offer health insurance that covers access to a wide array of contraceptive methods. The draft proposal, if finalized, would significantly broaden the type of companies and organizations that can request an exemption. So what's the exemption all about? I'm sure a lot of you remember the whole Hobby Lobby case. That serves as one exemption. In the Burwell versus Hobby Lobby case, the Supreme Court ruled 5-4 that it could allow closely held private businesses to also exclude birth control from their insurance plans if coverage would violate their religious beliefs, right? Now, the Obama administration said, okay, that's fine. If the company doesn't want to provide that coverage, we'll just make sure that the health insurance, the private insurance come in and they provide the coverage for it. But under Trump's executive order, should he sign it based on this draft legislation, private insurers wouldn't even have to do it. Private insurers can say, well, we have some religious beliefs as well, and as a result of those religious beliefs, we don't want to cover birth control for women. They can go ahead and be exempt because of Trump.
So look, earlier in the show, we talked about how you shouldn't make assumptions about all Republicans. But at the same time, you should educate yourself on where the parties stand. They're not the same. And the Democratic Party is greatly frustrating and serves our donors way, way too much, and we fight against that. But the Republican Party is the party that is generally against science, whether it's climate change or it's educators that say, oh, the Ivy League towers and etc. Whether it's the media that they attack because they bring you information. And so if you believe in birth control, which by the way, I think 99% of women take it. I think that's a stat that we covered back when this was in the news during Obamacare. Well, be careful because the Republican Party might make sure that your insurance doesn't cover it. Because as Rush Limbaugh said about Sandra Fluck, that she wanted it because she was a slut.
That's exactly what he said, yeah. Which is interesting because when he's traveling abroad with gigantic bottles of opioids, right, or painkillers, and looking to have sex with randos in other countries, like he's not a slut for doing that.
Yeah,
right?
Not only look, he's a drug addict, so I guess he needs mental health. But in that case, when he was going to the Caribbean, he had gallons full of Viagra, so it wasn't just painkillers.
Oh, it was Viagra as well.
Okay. Yeah, because and he was not traveling with a girlfriend or wife. And to our knowledge, did not have one in the Caribbean. So it's fairly clear what he was doing there.
Right.
But women who take birth control, in other words, 99% of women are sluts.
Right, based on what he says. Okay, so it's just really fascinating how there is a double standard when it comes to the issue of birth control. Now, why did Obama want to ensure that birth control was covered? Either by employers or by private insurance companies. It's because right now the government spends $11 billion a year on unintended pregnancies. Now, if Republicans had their way, they just wouldn't provide any type of support for impoverished women who end up having babies that they can't afford, right? They would just let them, they would show how pro-life they are by snatching any type of government aid from them and letting them fend for themselves. But the reality is, if you want to lower healthcare costs, you have to deal with some of the more costly things that are happening in society. You have to encourage people to have healthier lifestyles. You have to make sure that people, you know, take part in preventative healthcare measures. And one of those preventative healthcare measures is taking birth control if you are not in a position to have a kid. By the way, birth control is actually used for things other than preventing pregnancies. There are women that rely on birth control for a number of different health conditions because it has, you know, off-label benefits as well. But it doesn't matter. These are all nuances and these are all facts that people like Trump and the religious right don't care about. But at the same time, they have no problem with insurance covering Viagra. Like if a guy wants to get a hard on and get his dick wet, that's okay. But if a woman wants to prevent pregnancy or use birth control for some other healthcare related issue, that's unacceptable.
So the last thing is, we don't live in a theocracy. That's for Saudi Arabia and Iran and the Vatican, okay? So I don't care what your religious beliefs are in terms of birth control. Don't care. In America, I get to not care. We should all have the ability to get whatever birth control we want and not have it be, but that guy believes in Sharia law and hence doesn't believe in birth control, so you can't get it. Your insurance doesn't cover it, so you gotta pay out of pocket. Well, what do I care about your Sharia law? I would care about your Sharia law if we lived in Saudi Arabia, but we don't. And just because you're Christian doesn't make it less Sharia law. It is. That's your particular voodoo. I don't care about it. I'm not Christian. I'm agnostic. I don't believe in your voodoo.
Yeah.
So I know I'm not Muslim. I can draw the Prophet Muhammad all day long because I'm not in your religion. And so I'm not in your religion if you're a Christian and you think we all shouldn't take birth control and we should all have 1,000 babies. One, you don't even believe that. And you're not pro-life either. 1,000 stories we've covered where they get abortions and they go, well, I needed one. I'm not like the sluts.
I mean, 1,000 stories we've covered involving childhood hunger, right? Kids living in poverty in this country, which is supposed to be the wealthiest country in the world. Where are the pro-life people holding their signs and talking about how much they want to protect these poor little kids?
Where are the good Christians looking after the poor? That's what Jesus told you over and over again. But look after the poor, look after the needy, look after the poor, look after them. Where are you? Where are you? Claim to be Christian? Okay, and what do you want to do? Oh, cut welfare, they're welfare queens. So please spare me your religious gumbo jumbo, okay? I don't care what you think Yahweh or Allah thinks, okay? overwhelming majority of Americans use birth control. Let us have access to it without punishing women and making them pay more because you won't put it into insurance.
Yeah, by the way, what the hell is the point of insurance, right? If it's not gonna cover health related issues. Like what the hell, you're gonna tell private insurance companies, no, you don't have to cover that. You don't have to cover this, you don't have to cover that, you don't have to cover anything. You're gonna charge people a certain amount of money every month, right? You're gonna give them these gigantic premiums and deductibles, but you don't have to cover birth control. It's absurd, it's absurd. And they just don't understand the reason why it was covered in the first place. It wasn't like, hey, everybody go out there and have sex. It's part of preventative care. But again, they don't care about these issues, not even a little bit.
For God's sake, literally in this case. If you believe in a religion, you practice it, not me, you practice it. So if you're one of these religious organizations, your Hobby Lobby, what the hell, is a corporation religious, by the way? Everything about this is insane, okay? Then you go Hobby Lobby in the corner with no birth control and get knocked up for Jesus, okay? I don't care, that's your business. But you can't make it our business. Oh, no, according to my Sharia law, you shouldn't get birth control either. Well, that's like your opinion, man. But the founding fathers made this a secular country. They said we shall have the free exercise of religion and we shall not establish a religion. If you don't like it, get out because you're not American. Okay.
We gotta take a break. So let's do that. We'll be back.
All right, back on the Young Turks, Femme Fantastique writes in, this is another great argument for single payer healthcare. The pro-hate, I mean anti-abortion people won't have to be bothered. Cheese Place writes in, and let's not forget that nowhere in the Bible does it say don't use birth control.
Yeah.
In fact, their whole argument for that is related to onanism. Don't spill your seed. There's, and I love telling this story, you wanna tell it again?
Yes.
Okay, Onan was supposed to fuck his brother's wife after his brother died. That was his job in the Bible. Like, hey, if your brother dies, obviously you're supposed to fuck his wife.
So everyone should be fucking everyone's wives.
Yeah. But to be fair, only if your brother dies, then swoop in on his wife immediately, okay? But he felt a little guilty while having sex with her, so he pulled out and spilled his seed on the ground. And God was really mad and struck him down for not finishing inside his brother's wife. That's in the Bible.
But isn't that?
Don't get mad at me, that's in the Bible.
But I mean, you're kind of, I love that story just because of how absurd it is, right? But doesn't that kind of prove that birth control is, like a ban on birth control is kind of mentioned in the Bible? Because like the withdrawal method is a form of birth control, right? Although sometimes it doesn't work, but yeah.
It's frowned upon, that's right.
Yeah.
So that's why I brought it up, to be fair. Don't pull out if you're fucking your brother's wife.
Yeah. Okay, God or don't jerk off. Like do whatever you do.
Now, they didn't mention birth control, and they didn't in the Bible. It's true, but they said you should finish inside your brother's wife. Again, don't blame me. Read the Bible. Get educated.
The Bible's raunchy.
Yeah, no. Some parts of the Bible, you're like, this is kind of enticing.
Yeah, they didn't teach me that in Sunday school, but anyway.
Oh, by the way, for our post game, we have TYT Classics for the members today too. That's where we show you old clips. Also a little enticing. Yes. Apparently in the TYT Classics clip from 2007, Anna and I both claimed that we will not be getting married.
We will never get married. It's such a great video. You guys do not want to miss it.
The members will love it. Yeah. And then in the post game, alternative career paths, a little bit of drums, a little bit of controversy.
Alternative career path fantasies.
Fantasies.
Yeah.
Okay, fantasies in the postgame. TYTnetwork.com/join to get all that if you're a member. And you would have also seen the Elizabeth Warren video and interview about 24 hours before everybody else did. So TYTnetwork.com/join. Okay, what's next, Anna?
All right. The University of California Board of Regents just recently underwent an audit. And through that audit, there was some revelation about money that was being spent frivolously at very fancy dinners while simultaneously tuition was going up for students within the UC system. Now, just to give you a little taste, a little example, from 2012 until May 17th of 2017, the UC Board of Regents expensed luxury banquets totaling over $225,000, which is a lot of money to eat, right?
But to be fair, that is a 5-year period, and they're banquets.
Yeah, whatever. 5-year period where they spend almost $250,000 when they continuously increase tuition for students. And by the way, look, I just want to preface this entire story by saying I understand that if they didn't have these fancy dinners, it wouldn't close any budget gaps and it wouldn't help pay for everything, including their operating costs. I get that. But if you're making an argument that we don't have any money, man, we gotta increase tuition for these students, and then you proceed to go out and spend $300 per person on a fancy dinner, doesn't look so good, right? So on one night in January, this 65-person party had racked up a $17,600 bill, or roughly $271 per diner.
That's a lot.
Yeah, which they charged to the university. The next day, the same Regents voted to raise tuition by 2.5% or $336 for each in-state student. Imagine what they increased it for out-of-state students who of course pay much more in tuition than in-state students.
Well, Anna, I don't get it. It seems like they just raised the tuition by the price of a dinner. So what's the big deal?
This is so absurd, and I'm really glad that this audit took place. Through this audit, they also found that there was some slush fund that was being hidden from students, millions of dollars, not looking good, right? Now, up to now, board diners had been paid, I'm sorry, let me read to you from Monica Lozano, who is actually the Board of Regents chair, and here's what she had to say in response to this audit and the criticism that they've been getting. She says, up to now, board dinners have been paid for with monies from the Searless Fund, a private endowment that the donor designed or designated for university business costs not covered by state or tuition funds. However, to avoid any question over use of university or university associated funds, Regents will absorb the cost of their board dinners from this point forward. First of all, you should be absorbing the cost of your board dinners from the very beginning, because administrators at these universities are not poor, right? Presidents at these universities are not poor. They make a ton of money, right? You can afford your own dinner. In fact, that's what leaders do, right? A leader who wants to run a university system that actually looks out and takes care of its students would say, hey, you know what? I'm just not gonna have this $300 dinner paid for by the UC system. I'd rather have that money go toward, I don't know, maybe funding a department that's been underfunded, or hiring an additional professor in a specific department, whatever it is, helping your students, giving back. That's what leaders do, but that's not what happened in this case.
Okay, now I have to confess a $250 dinner sounds great. Although actually it's a bit much, because I'm sure that involves a lot of wine, and I don't really care about wine. That's usually what drives the cost
up. You know what? $250 dinners are great. They happen very rarely, but when they do happen, you know who pays for them? I do. And you know what? It tastes delicious, because I earn that dinner and I'm not hurting someone else in order to eat a freaking steak, right?
Yeah. Usually it's when someone else is paying that you keep ordering the wine,
right,
et cetera, right?
By the way, I don't think I've ever spent $250
on
dinner.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money, yes.
Per person on dinner, that's a gigantic amount of money. Anyway, but the reason I say all that is because, okay, whatever, right? The real problem is the tuition is way, way too high. Yesterday I interviewed Elizabeth Warren on the show, and as I was doing research on her career, she was born barely middle class, really pretty poor. Her dad, I think, was a janitor when they were growing up, and she grew up in Oklahoma. And the reason she did all this she did was because her tuition cost her $50 a semester. Absorb that for a second. $50 a semester.
That is insane.
So now they talk about like the older generations, like, oh, millennials are so lazy and they're so this and they're so that, right? Yeah, look, guys, if you paid $50 for your education per semester, yeah, we would do that too.
Yep.
But so to blame people who, and then put all the student debt on top of them, and then for the Board of Regents to go out and be like, another bottle of wine.
Yeah.
That's the problem. The context is the problem.
Let me oversimplify the issue in a visual way so everyone understands, in case they're having a difficult time understanding this incredibly simple story, if you ask me. Okay, so here is inflation, right? Inflation. This is inflation. Inflation happens, right? The price of things goes up, inflation, okay? And then here's what happened with college tuition. It went like that, right?
Okay.
Inflation, college tuition. Inflation, college tuition.
There it
okay?
is. There
Wages
is.
Are stagnant. You know, first of all, millennials who graduated college are underemployed. You think fresh out of high school students are making like 50 grand a year to pay for their college education? No, I don't think they are. Anyway, how about you stop having your fancy dinners and actually be leaders and represent your students and take care of them, okay? This selfish, greedy behavior is ridiculous. And by the way, the audit found, I wanted to find the exact number so I gave you accurate information. The audit found a $175 million slush fund, right?
Yeah. That's a lot of money.
Why are you hiding that money though? Why are you hiding that money? I thought you guys didn't have money for the students. I thought that you had to, they just had to increase tuition. It's so painful to increase tuition, right? That's what they claim.
It could be a rainy day fund.
Whatevs. It was undisclosed and it seems very suspicious. And that's the reason why people are extremely critical of the Board of Regents. By the way, the $270 meals were so lavish that they may have actually violated school policy. UC reimbursement policy allows school officials to expend up to $81 for a dinner, right? I don't know, $300 is very different from 81.
Yeah. And so look, the number one problem again is we need to have kids be able to get the American dream, live the American dream. The way you do that is actually a free education, not one that is an albatross around your neck and that you can't ever get rid of. But on top of that, if you're rubbing it in everybody's face by having these extravagant dinners and you've got a fund of $175 million just for slushies at 7-Eleven, I mean, it's just obviously unacceptable. Stop the gumbo jumbo.
Okay. All right, let's do one more story before we go to break.
Okay.
During the Women's March, there was a statue put up in Wall Street that showed the so-called fearless girl, right? Little girl who's kind of standing up to the Wall Street bull. Now, there was an update to this story fairly recently. The sculptor behind the Wall Street bull was very sensitive and was very hurt by the fearless girl because he felt like it kind of demonized the Wall Street bull and it was unfair to him. As an artist, it was extremely unfair. Now, another incident happened recently that was crazy. Another artist, not the sculptor of the bull, gets involved and decides to erect a pug that's peeing on the fearless girl. So do we have a photo of that? Okay, there it is. You see the pug, it's lifting its leg and peeing on the girl, okay. All right, so the guy behind that is Alex Gardega, and he says it has nothing to do with feminism, speaking about the fearless girl statue. And it's a disrespect to the artist that made the bull. That bull had integrity.
Yeah, it has to do with feminism.
Nothing feels better than a rando guy talking about how a statue has nothing to do with feminism. Really? Why are you the authority on whether or not that statue has anything to do with feminism? And why are you getting involved in this situation, right? It could be because he wants attention. If that's the case, you know, mission accomplished. He says, I decided to build this dog and make it crappy to downgrade the statue, exactly how the girl is a downgrade on the bull.
Yeah, no, but he has no hard feelings about
no
the
hard
girl.
Feelings. No.
And this is not a political statement at all. He's just trying to protect the artist,
because
that's who he is. Okay, it's super obvious where you're coming at it from politically. Okay, so I will adjudicate all of this. Number one, the bull is badass, and I've always loved that bull. I think it looks really cool. So much respect to the original artist who sculpted the bull. Now, in the meanwhile, though, what has happened is it has become a symbol of Wall Street. And Wall Street, not much loved, and by me or by the country. And so then the bull started taking on a different connotation. So whether you like it or not, it did. And actually that makes your art more interesting. It became iconic. And then when people were upset at Wall Street, then they became upset at that symbol. That's powerful. So you should be proud of that no matter what. So then because of that, somebody else did the sculpture of the fearless girl standing up to the symbol of Wall Street and unfortunately greed. So that's a really interesting form of art. If I was the artist who made the bull, I wouldn't take offense at that. I'd maybe if I loved it and people started taking it as a symbol of greed, I might feel not great about that, but I get that, hey, that's what happens with art, right? The fact that your art took on a life of its own is amazing. No, you should be super proud of that.
Unfortunately, he adorned this bull with his balls, right? Because like, seriously, like be a little more, I don't know how to say it, like I guess confident in yourself, like confident in your work. That bull, you're right, is one of the most iconic sculptures in the United States, right? Everyone knows that bull, and you should be proud of yourself. You shouldn't feel this sensitive and this hurt over another statue and how that statue makes your bull look. Like, yeah. It's just crazy. It just makes me feel like he's weak in a lot of ways, you know? And I almost like hesitate to say that, but it's true. I can't believe that this has become like a big controversy.
So, continuing my adjudication of this matter.
Okay, please continue.
But overall, great job on the first bull, great job on the fearless girl. Now the pug, we finally get to the pug, guilty. Okay, you're being childish. Like, I didn't like that girl standing up to greed. Why'd she have to do that? Oh yeah, I'm gonna urinate on her. Okay,
I'm gonna have
this little dog urinate on her, and ha ha. But no, it has nothing to do with feminism, right? Okay, this is gonna get out of control because there's gonna be another artist. And they're gonna build something on top of the bull, on top of the dog, right? And then you're gonna have maybe a larger thing taking a dump on it, right?
Yeah,
you were urinating, now I'm doing this, right? Or maybe for the fetish community out there, they'll have a woman stepping on the dog, okay? And then that gets into a whole other thing.
Well,
okay?
You know, just to give you guys all the deets on this story, the dog was only there for a couple hours. The artist then removed the dog, so it wasn't like a permanent fixture there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's much, much better, okay? But bring it down, dude. That girl was not an attack on you. If you perceived it as an attack on you, then maybe that says a lot more about you than it does about the statue.
All right, we gotta take a break. Let's do that, and when we come back, some drama in the world of sports. I don't often talk about sports, but when I do, you know it's interesting, so you wanna come back.
Go. All right, back on the Young Turks. Normally we read tweets throughout the show if you use hashtag TYT Live, but from time to time we also read this super chat messages from YouTube. And Mick Nogard wrote in fire emoji, running kid emoji, top hat emoji, Bernie for president 2020.
I mean, I like the emoji use. I don't know why it makes sense or how it makes sense, but
Mick Nogard, we heard you.
Yeah.
Okay, Derek Martin writes in on Twitter, baby boomers, why aren't millennials more successful in their own homes? Millennials, because you assholes spike tuition for $250 dinners. Kiki Wellington writes in, well, let's face it, a $300 dinner is no fun if you have to pay it for it yourself. Ryan Zephyr writes in, inflation and college tuition, hand gestures need to be memed. Agreed. There were some excellent inflation, college tuition. College tuition. Okay. Anyways, and finally, your mama says that artist is salty as hell.
Salty as hell. That is the right word.
Over the little girl statue.
That is the right word. I obviously really like that tweet.
Yeah, indeed. Anna and I were talking during the break that it's personal for the guys who get that mad. Like, but the fearless girl, it didn't even occur to me to be upset about that.
Right.
And so when you're upset about feminism, it isn't ideological. Something happened to you. Some rejection or something along those lines, and that's why you're so salty. Let's just keep it real. All right, what's next, Sam?
All right. CNN has decided to fire Kathy Griffin and uninvite her from any future New Year's Eve hosting jobs that she typically does with Anderson Cooper. Now, why are they doing this? Well, if you missed the news yesterday, Kathy Griffin got a lot of hate, a lot of heat after she posted a photo of herself holding a head, a decapitated head that appeared to look like Donald Trump. It was bloody, it was graphic, and a lot of people, both on the left and the right, criticized her for it, us included. Well, CNN really didn't like it, and here's what they tweeted. CNN has terminated our agreement with Kathy Griffin to appear on our New Year's Eve program. Now, she did apologize, which initially she tried to defend the image as a work of art. But I think after so many people criticized her for it, she kind of wised up and realized that it was a really bad idea. And here's what she posted to Twitter.
Hey everybody, it's me, Kathy Griffin. I sincerely apologize. I am just now seeing the reaction of these images. I'm a comic. I cross the line. I move the line, then I cross it. I went way too far. The image is too disturbing. I understand how it offends people. It wasn't funny. I get it. I've made a lot of mistakes in my career. I will continue. I asked your forgiveness, taking down the image, gonna ask the photographer to take down the image, and I beg for your forgiveness. I went too far. I made a mistake and I was wrong.
So it's a fine apology, but you usually get that kind of apology when it hurts your pocketbook. When it hits the wallet, you're like, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean it.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I totally accept her apology, not that she cares. But you know, like, that was a genuine apology and she realized she was wrong. At the same time, it's interesting because in this current political climate, an apology is like suicide, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you don't apologize, if you take the Donald Trump route and you just refuse to apologize after you say crazy things, people just forget about it, mm-hmm. right? But then when you do apologize, I feel like you get more criticism and more people pile on. Mm-hmm. Now Anderson Cooper, who does host these New Year's Eve specials with her, tweeted about this whole incident as well. And man, like boom, 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 like she's under that bus. Okay.
Okay.
This is just dirty dirt. I really didn't like this tweet. He wrote, for the record, I am appalled by the photo shoot Kathy Griffin took part in. It is clearly disgusting and completely inappropriate. I just feel like it's a little extra. You know what I mean? Like he went a little too far. I get it. You know, you could just say, I don't agree with it. I wish she hadn't done that, right? But she's kind of a colleague of yours. Like just.
Yeah, just bring it down, dude. I get it. You don't want advertisers bailing on you either.
Right.
Super obvious.
Yeah.
Okay, so final thing on this that I think is relevant is that, look, I think that advertisers are too risk averse and they make all the media risk averse and it drives me crazy. And I'm actually, let me go on the record on a randomly here to say that I don't agree with the advertising boycott of Sean Hannity.
What?
So the Glenn Beck, I think, was different, and Bill O'Reilly was different. I'm not sure I even agreed with those, but I know that they had crossed a lot of lines. For Bill O'Reilly, it was physical; he crossed physical lines, right? But Sean Hannity, so you don't agree with some conspiracy he has, whatever, right? But in this one, I do agree, and I'll tell you why. It's because we're coarsening everything by everyone trying to grab attention. And usually what we do is you do horrible things or say horrible things, you get more attention and you are rewarded for it. So I like that we've drawn some line on the outer edges, right? When you show a decapitated president's head, apparently there is a line. And so we're not gonna reward you for trying to grab attention in that way. So I agree with CNN's actions here on Kathy Griffin. I agree that Anderson Cooper needlessly rubbed salt in those wounds.
Yeah.
And I also agree that we accept her apology and move on with our lives.
Right, exactly. Now, I just want to draw a really quick distinction between a line that Democrats will agree to versus a line that Republicans will agree to, right? I don't know if there would be this much backlash if the tables were turned and a right-wing public figure did something similar toward a liberal president or a Democratic president.
I think there would be.
You think so?
I mean, this is speculation,
but I just feel like, I don't know, there were a lot of heinous things said by Trump that Republicans continuously defend.
But like I said yesterday when we were talking about the original Kathy Griffin story, if you showed a decapitated head of Obama, bloodied, people would have been super mad.
Now let me be clear though, because there weren't any public figures that I know of at least that did that. However, there were certainly a lot of Republican voters who shared imagery of Obama hanging from a noose and that kind of stuff. Like that stuff was all over the place. There's a difference between public figures and
there
private
was target
citizens.
Practice of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. I understand that, but the bloodied, severed head is so visual, so graphic that I think it's a different line. Again, you put in any other head there, that a Democrat, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders. Oh, it's no. People would have been livid. So I think that there would have been the same reaction in this case. That's my opinion.
All right. Well, we'll see how this all plays out. The apology seems sincere. I guess that's all that matters.
Okay.
Yeah. We are
out of time.
All
right, guys. So we promised a sports story.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to do it?
We ran out of time, so we got to do it tomorrow. We got TYT Classics and a post-game show tonight.
Okay, I hear you.
Yeah.
Look, sometimes I look at Anna as we're ending the show. You know why? Because she's the boss. Okay, so
this is what feminazis do. Okay?
Yeah,
they
right.
Come
and
in,
now
they
all
rob
of a, sudden.
A man's company right from him.
Yeah, and now I gotta sit here and to take my cues from her. That's what happens when you prepare the show or you prepare this hour, and I don't. Okay, all right, guys, much love. In the post game, we've got the alternative career fantasies. I actually love that game.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's so good.
You know my top one, right? So,
oh yes, I do.
Okay, so we'll share that if you haven't heard that, and I'll give you some of the others as well. And then in the TYT Classics, a clip where Anna and I promised about a decade ago that we would never get married. We're now both married. So members, you will enjoy that. You will make fun of us. It'll be one wonderful. TYTnetwork.com/join to become a member.
And real quick, Murder with Friends, who's hosted by Grace Baldridge, one of my favorite people on the planet, has been nominated for a Streamy. Please vote for it. Please have her win. She's awesome.
Yeah, and Hassan Piker nominated for a Streamy, for pastrami with gumbo jumbo.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.